but then wondered if Ren would find this really skanky and ridiculous. She'd probably imagined the spark between them outside Moshulu. But then, Ren had gotten into the hot tub with her. "So, if you don't like field hockey, why do you play?" Ren asked. "Because it looks good on a college application." Now Ren sat up a little, making the water ripple. "It does?" Yeah. Spencer shifted and winced when her shoulder muscle cramped into her neck. "You okay?" Ren asked. "Yeah, it's nothing," Spencer said, and inexplicably felt an overwhelming wave of despair. It was only the first day of school, and she was already burned out. She thought of all the homework she had to do, lists she had to make, and lines she had to memorize. She was too busy to freak out, but that was the only thing keeping her from freaking out. "Is it your shoulder?" "I think," Spencer said, trying to rotate it. "In field hockey, you spend so much time bending over, and I don't know if I pulled it or what. I bet I could fix it for you." Spencer stared at him. She suddenly had an urge to run her fingers through his shaggy hair. "That's okay. Thanks, though." "Really?" he said. "I'm not going to bite you." Spencer hated when people said that. "I'm a doctor," Ren continued. "I bet it's your posterior deltoid." Okay. "Your shoulder muscle." He motioned for her to come closer. "Come here. Seriously. We just need to soften the muscle." Spencer tried not to read into that. He was a doctor, after all. He was being doctorly. She drifted to him, and he pressed his hands into the middle of her back. His thumbs dug into the little muscles around her spine. Spencer closed her eyes. "Wow, that's awesome," she murmured. "You just have some fluid buildup in your bursa sac," he said. Spencer tried not to giggle at the word sac. When he reached under her sports bra strap to dig deeper, she swallowed hard. She tried to think about non-sexual things, her Uncle Daniel's nose hair, the constipated look her mom got on her face when she rode a horse, the time her cat, Kitten, carried a dead mole from the creek out back and left it in her bedroom. "He's a doctor," she told herself. "This is just what doctors do." "Your pectorals are a little tight, too," Ren said, and, horrifyingly, moved his hand to the front of her body. He slid his fingers under her bra again, rubbing just above her chest, and suddenly the bra strap fell off her shoulder. Spencer breathed in, but he didn't move away. "This is a doctor thing," she reminded herself again. But then she realized Ren was a first-year med student. "He will be a doctor," she corrected herself. "One day, in about 10 years. Where's my sister?" she asked quietly. "The store, I think. Wawa? Wawa?" Spencer jerked away from Ren and pulled her bra strap back on her shoulder. "Wawa's only a mile away. If she's going there, she's just picking up cigarettes or something. She'll be back any minute." "I don't think she smokes," Ren said, tilting his head questioningly. "You know what I mean?" Spencer stood up in the tub, grabbed her Ralph Lauren towel, and began violently drying her hair. She felt so hot. Her skin, bones, even her organs and nerves felt like they'd been braised in the hot tub. She climbed out and fled to the house in search of a giant glass of water. "Spencer," Ren called after her. "I didn't mean to. I was just trying to help." But Spencer didn't listen. She ran up to her room and looked around. Her stuff was still in boxes, still packed up to move to the barn. Suddenly, she wanted everything organized. Her jewelry box needed to be sorted by gemstone. Her computer was clogged with old English papers from 2 years ago, and even though they'd gotten A's back then, they were probably embarrassingly bad and should be deleted. She stared at the books in the boxes. They needed to be arranged by subject matter, not by author. Obviously. She pulled them out and started shelving, starting with adultery and The Scarlet Letter. But by the time she got to Utopia's Gone Wrong, she still didn't feel any better. So she switched on her computer and pressed her wireless mouse, which was comfortingly cool, to the back of her neck. She clicked on her email and saw an unopened letter. The subject line read, SAT Vocab. Curious, she clicked on it. Spencer. Covet is an easy one. When someone covets something, they desire and lust after it. Usually it's something they can't have. You've always had that problem, though, haven't you? A. Spencer's stomach seized. She looked around. Who the fuck could have seen? She threw open her bedroom's biggest window, but the Hastings' circular driveway was empty. Spencer looked around. A few cars swished past. The neighbor's lawn service guy was trimming a hedge by their front gate. Her dogs were chasing each other around the side yard. Some birds flew to the top of a telephone pole. Then, something caught her eye in the neighbor's upstairs window. A flash of blondish hair. But wasn't the new family black? An icy shiver crept up Spencer's spine. That was Allie's old window. 8. Where are the damn Girl Scouts when you need them? Hannah sank farther into the squishy cushions of her couch and tried to unbutton Sean's paper denim jeans.
Whoa, Sean said. We can't.
Hannah smiled mysteriously and put a finger to her lips. She started kissing Sean's neck. He smelled like Lever 2000 and, strangely, chocolate, and she loved how his recently buzzed haircut showed off all the sexy angles of his face. She'd loved him since sixth grade, and he'd only gotten handsomer with each passing year. As they kissed, Hannah's mother, Ashley, unlocked the front door and walked inside, chatting on her teensy LG flip phone. Sean recoiled against the couch cushions.
She'll see,
he whispered, quickly tucking in his pale blue Lacoste polo. Hannah shrugged. Her mom waved at them blankly and walked into the other room. Her mom paid more attention to her BlackBerry than she did to Hannah. Because of her work schedule, she and Hannah didn't bond much, aside from periodic checkups on homework, notes on which shops were running the best sales, and reminders that she should clean her room in case any of the execs coming to her cocktail party needed to use the upstairs bathroom. But Hannah was mostly okay with that. After all, her mom's job was what paid Hannah's Amex bill. She wasn't always taking things. And her pricey tuition at Rosewood Day.
I have to go, Sean murmured.
You should come over on Saturday, Hannah purred. My mom's going to be at the spa all day.
I'll see you at Noel's party on Friday, Sean said. And you know this is hard enough.
Hannah groaned.
It doesn't have to be so hard, she whined.
He leaned down to kiss her.
See you tomorrow.
After Sean let himself out, she buried her face in the couch pillow. Dating Sean still felt like a dream. Back when Hannah was chubby and lame, she'd adored how tall and athletic he was, how he was always really nice to teachers and kids who were less cool, and how he dressed well, not like a colorblind slob. She never stopped liking him, even after she shed her last few stubborn inches and discovered defrizzing hair products. So last school year, she casually whispered to James Freed in study hall that she liked Sean, and Colleen Rink told her 3 periods later that Sean was going to call Hannah on her cell that night after soccer. It was yet another moment Hannah was pissed Allie wasn't here to witness. They'd been a couple for 7 months, and Hannah felt more in love with him than ever. She hadn't told him yet. She'd kept that to herself for years. But now, she was pretty sure he loved her, too. And wasn't sex the best way to express love? That was why the virginity pledge thing made no sense. It wasn't as if Sean's parents were overly religious, and it went against every preconceived notion Hannah had about guys. Despite how she used to look, Hannah had to hand it to herself. With her deep brown hair, curvy body,
and flawless, we're talking no pimples ever, skin, she was hot. Who wouldn't fall madly in love with her? Sometimes she wondered if Sean was gay. He did have a lot of nice clothes, or if he had a fear of vaginas. Hannah called for her miniature pincher, Dot, to hop up on the couch. "Did you miss me today?" she squealed as Dot licked her hand. Hannah had petitioned to let Dot come to school in her oversized Prada handbag. All the girls in Beverly Hills did it, after all. But Rosewood Day said no. So to prevent separation anxiety, Hannah had bought Dot the snuggliest Gucci bed money could buy and left QVC on her bedroom TV during the day. Her mother strode into the living room, still in her tailored tweed suit and brown kitten heel slingbacks. "There's sushi," Ms. Marin said. Hannah looked up. "Toro rolls? I don't know. I got a bunch of things." Hannah strode into the kitchen, taking in her mom's laptop and buzzing LG. "What now?" Ms. Marin barked into the phone. Dot's little claws tick-ticked behind Hannah. After searching through the bag, she settled on one piece of yellowtail sashimi, one eel roll, and a small bowl of miso soup. "Well, I talked to the client this morning," her mom went on. "They were happy then." Hannah daintily dipped her yellowtail roll into some soy sauce and flipped breezily through a J.Crew catalog. Her mom was second in command at the Philly advertising firm McManus & Tate, and her goal was to be the firm's first woman president. Besides being extremely successful and ambitious, Ms. Marin was what most guys at Rosewood Day would call a MILF. She had long red-gold hair, smooth skin, and an incredibly supple body, thanks to her daily vinyasa yoga ritual. Hannah knew her mom wasn't perfect, but she still didn't get why her parents had divorced 4 years ago, or why her father quickly began dating an average-looking ER nurse from Annapolis, Maryland, named Isabel. Talk about trading down. Isabel had a teenage daughter, Kate, and Mr. Marin had said Hannah would just love her. A few months after the divorce, he'd invited Hannah to Annapolis for the weekend. Nervous about meeting her quasi-stepsister, Hannah begged Allie to come along. "Don't worry, Han," Allie assured her. "We'll outclass whoever this Kate girl is." When Hannah looked at her, unconvinced, she reminded Hannah of her signature phrase, "I'm Allie, and I'm fabulous." It sounded almost silly now, but back then, Hannah could only imagine what it would feel like to be so confident. Having Allie there was like a security blanket, proof she wasn't a loser her dad just wanted to get away from. The day had been a train wreck anyway. Kate was the prettiest girl Hannah had ever met, and her dad had basically called her a pig right in front of Kate. He'd quickly backpedaled and said it was only a joke, but that was the very last time she'd seen him, and the very first time she ever made herself throw up. But Hannah hated thinking about stuff in the past, so she rarely did. Besides, now Hannah got to ogle her mom's dates in a not-so-will-you-be-my-new-father way. And would her father let Hannah have a 2 a.m. curfew and drink wine like her mom did? Doubtful. Her mom snapped her phone shut and fastened her emerald green eyes on Hannah. "Those are your back-to-school shoes?" Hannah stopped chewing. "Yeah." Ms. Marin nodded. "Did you get a lot of compliments?" Hannah turned her ankle to inspect her purple wedges. Too afraid to face the sack security, she'd actually paid for them. "Yeah, I did."
"Mind if I borrow them?"
Sure, if you want." Her mom's phone rang again. She pounced on it. "Carson? Yes, I've been looking for you all night. What the hell is going on there?" Hannah blew at her side-swept bangs and fed Dot a tiny piece of eel. As Dot spit it out on the floor, the doorbell rang. Her mother didn't even flinch. "They need it tonight," she said to the phone. "It's your project. Do I have to come down and hold your hand?" The doorbell rang again. Dot started barking, and her mother stood to get it.
"It's probably those Girl Scouts again."
The Girl Scouts had come over 3 days in a row, trying to sell them cookies at dinner time. They were rabid in this neighborhood.
Within seconds, she was back in the kitchen with a young, brown-haired, green-eyed police officer behind her.
"This gentleman says he wants to speak with you."
A gold pin on the breast pocket of his uniform read, "Wilden."
"Me?"
Hannah pointed at herself.
"You're Hannah Marin?"
Wilden asked. The walkie-talkie on his belt made a noise. Suddenly, Hannah realized who this guy was. Darren Wilden. He'd been a senior at Rosewood when she was in seventh grade. The Darren Wilden she remembered allegedly slept with a whole girls' diving team and was almost kicked out of school for stealing the principal's vintage Ducati motorcycle. But this cop was definitely the same guy. Those green eyes were hard to forget, even if it had been 4 years since she'd seen them. Hannah hoped he was a stripper that Mona had sent over as a joke.
"What's this all about?"
Ms. Marin asked, looking longingly back at her cell phone. "Why are you interrupting us at dinner?"
"We received a call from Tiffany's,"
Wilden said.
"They have you on tape shoplifting some items from their store. Tapes from various other mall security cameras tracked you out of the mall into your car. We traced the license plate."
Hannah started pinching the inside of her palm with her fingernails, something she always did when she felt out of control.
"Hannah wouldn't do that," Ms. Marin barked.
"Would you, Hannah?" Hannah opened her mouth to respond, but no words came out. Her heart was banging against her ribs.
"Look."
Wilden crossed his arms over his chest. Hannah noticed the gun on his belt. It looked like a toy.
"I just need you to come to the station. Maybe it's nothing."
"I'm sure it's nothing," Ms. Marin said.
Then she took her Fendi wallet out of its matching purse.
"What will it take for you to leave us alone to have our dinner?"
"Ma'am."
Wilden sounded exasperated.
"You should just come down with me, all right? It won't take all night, I promise."
He smiled that sexy Darren Wilden smile that had probably kept him from getting expelled from Rosewood.
"Well," Hannah's mother said.
She and Wilden looked at each other for a long moment.
"Let me get my bag."
Wilden turned to Hannah.
"I'm gonna have to cuff you."
Hannah gasped.
"Cuff me?"
Okay, now that was silly. It sounded fake. Like something the 6-year-old twins next door would say to each other. But Wilden pulled out real steel handcuffs and gently put them around her wrists. Hannah hoped he didn't notice that her hands were shaking. If only this were the moment when Wilden tied her to a chair, put on that old 70s song Hot Stuff, and stripped off all his clothes. Unfortunately, it wasn't. The police station smelled like burned coffee and very old wood, because, like most of Rosewood's municipal buildings, it was a former railroad baron's mansion. Cops fluttered around her, taking phone calls, filling out forms, and sliding around on their little caster wheel chairs. Hannah half expected to see Mona here, too, with her mom's Dior stole thrown over her wrists. But from the look of the empty bench, it seemed Mona hadn't been caught. Ms. Marin sat very stiffly next to her. Hannah felt squirmy. Her mom was usually really lenient, but then Hannah had never been taken downtown and had the book thrown at her, or whatever. And then, very quietly, her mom leaned over.
"What was it that you took?"
"Huh?" Hannah asked.
"That bracelet you're wearing?"
Hannah looked down. Perfect. She'd forgotten to take it off. The bracelet was circling her wrist in full view. She shoved it farther up her sleeve. She felt her ears for the earrings. Yep, she'd worn them today, too. Talk about stupid.
"Give it to me," her mother whispered.
"Huh?" Hannah squeaked. Ms. Marin held out her palm.
"Give it here. I can handle this."
Reluctantly, Hannah let her mom unfasten the bracelet from her wrist. Then, Hannah reached up and took off the earrings and handed them over, too. Ms. Marin didn't even flinch. She simply dropped the jewelry in her purse and folded her hands over the metal clasp. The blonde Tiffany's girl who'd helped Hannah with the charm bracelet strode into the room. As soon as she saw Hannah, sitting dejectedly on the bench with the cuffs still in her hands, she nodded.
Yeah, that's her.
Darren Wilden glared at Hannah, and her mom stood up.
I think there's been a mistake.
She walked over to Wilden's desk.
I misunderstood you at the house. I was with Hannah that day. We bought that stuff. I have a receipt for it at home.
The Tiffany's girl narrowed her eyes in disbelief.
Are you suggesting I'm lying?
No, Ms. Marin said sweetly. I just think you're confused.
What was she doing?
A gooey, uncomfortable, almost guilty feeling washed over Hannah.
How do you explain the surveillance tapes? Wilden asked.
Her mom paused. Hannah saw a tiny muscle in her neck quiver. Then, before Hannah could stop her, she reached into her purse and took out the loot.
This was all my fault, she said, not Hannah's.
Ms. Marin turned back to Wilden. Hannah and I had a fight about these items. I said she couldn't have them. I drove her to this. She'll never do it again. I'll make sure of it. Hannah stared, stunned. She and her mom had never once discussed Tiffany's, let alone something she could or couldn't have. Wilden shook his head.
Ma'am, I think your daughter may need to do some community service. That's usually the penalty.
Ms. Marin blinked, innocently. Can't we let this slide? Please? Wilden looked at her for a long time, one corner of his mouth turned up almost devilishly.
Sit down, he said finally. Let me see what I can do.
Hannah looked everywhere but in her mom's direction. Wilden hunched over his desk. He had a Chief Wiggum figurine from The Simpsons and a metal slinky. He licked his pointer finger to turn the pages of the papers he was filling out. Hannah flinched. What sort of papers were they? Didn't the local newspapers report crimes?
This was bad. Very bad.
Hannah jiggled her foot nervously, having a sudden urge for some junior mints. Or maybe cashews. Even the Slim Jims on Wilden's desk would do. She could just see it. Everyone would find out, and she'd be instantaneously friendless and boyfriendless. From there, she'd recede back to dorky, seventh-grade Hannah in reverse evolution. She'd wake up and her hair would be a yucky, washed-out brown again. Then her teeth would go crooked, and she'd get her braces back on. She wouldn't be able to fit into any of her jeans. The rest would happen spontaneously. She'd spend her life chubby, ugly, miserable, and overlooked, just the way she used to be. I have some lotion if those are chafing your wrists, Ms. Marin said, gesturing to the cuffs and rooting around in her purse.
I'm okay, Hannah replied, brought back to the present.
Sighing, she pulled out her BlackBerry. It was tough because her hands were cuffed, but she wanted to convince Sean that he had to come over to her house this Saturday. She suddenly really wanted to know he would. As she stared blankly at the screen, an email popped up in her inbox. She opened it.
Hey, Hannah. Since prison food makes you fat, you know what Sean's gonna say? Not it. A.
She was so startled that she stood up, thinking someone might be across the room, watching her. But there was no one. She closed her eyes, trying to think who might have seen the police car at her house. Wilden looked up from his writing.
You all right?
Hannah said. Yeah. She slowly sat back down.
Not it? What the hell?
She checked the note's return address again, but it was just a mess of letters and numbers.
Hannah, Ms. Marin murmured after a few moments. No one needs to know about this.
Hannah blinked. Oh, yeah, I agree.
Good.
Hannah swallowed hard. Except, someone did know. 9. Not your typical student-teacher conference.
Wednesday morning, Arya's father, Byron, rubbed his bushy black hair and hand-signaled at the Subaru window that he was making a left-hand turn. The turn signals had stopped working last night, so he was driving Arya and Mike to their second day of school and taking the car to the shop.
"You guys happy to be back in America?"
Byron asked. Mike, who sat next to Arya in the back seat, grinned.
"America rocks."
He went back to maniacally punching the tiny buttons of his PSP. It made a farting noise, and Mike pumped one fist in the air. Arya's father smiled and navigated across the single-lane stone bridge, waving to a neighbor as he passed.
"Well, good. Now, why does it rock?" "America rocks because it has lacrosse,"
Mike said, not taking his eyes off his PSP.
"And hotter chicks. And a Hooters in King of Prussia."
Arya laughed, like Mike had been inside Hooters. Unless...
oh, God, had he?
She shivered in her Kelly Green alpaca shrug and stared out the window at the thick fog. A woman wearing a long, red hooded stadium jacket that said, "Upper Mainline Soccer Mom," tried to stop her German Shepherd from chasing a squirrel across the street. At the corner, two blondes with high-tech baby carriages stood together gossiping. There was one word to describe yesterday's English class: brutal. After Ezra blurted out, "Holy shit," the whole class turned and stared at her. Hannah Marin, who sat in front of her, whispered in a not-so-quiet voice, "Did you sleep with the teacher?" Arya considered, for a half second, that maybe Hannah had written her the text message about Ezra. Hannah was one of the few people who knew about Pictunia. But why would Hannah care? Ezra, Mr. Fitz, had dispelled the laughing quickly and come up with the lamest excuse for swearing in class. He said, and Arya quoted in her head,
"I was afraid that a bee had flown into my pants, and I thought the bee was going to sting me, and so I yelled out in terror."
As Ezra then started talking about five-paragraph themes and the class's syllabus, Arya couldn't concentrate. She was the bee that had flown into his pants. She couldn't stop looking at his wolfish eyes and his sumptuous pink mouth. When he peeked in her direction out of the corner of his eye, her heart did 2.5 somersaults off the high dive and landed in her stomach. Ezra was the guy for her, and she was the girl for him. She just knew it. So what if he was her teacher? There had to be a way to make it work. Her father pulled up to Rosewood's stone-gated entrance. In the distance, Arya noticed a vintage powder blue Volkswagen Beetle parked in the teacher's lot. She knew that car from Snooker's. It was Ezra's. She checked her watch. 15 minutes until homeroom. Mike shot out of the car. Arya opened her door as well, but her father touched her forearm.
"Hang on a sec,"
he said. "But I have to..." She glanced longingly at Ezra's bug.
"Just for a minute."
Her father turned down the radio volume. Arya slumped back in her seat.
"You've seemed a little..."
He flicked his wrist back and forth uncertainly.
"You okay?"
Arya shrugged. "About what?" Her father sighed.
"Well, I don't know, being back. And we haven't talked about, you know, in a while."
Arya fidgeted with her jacket zipper. "What's there to talk about?" Byron stuck a cigarette he'd rolled before they left into his mouth.
"I can't imagine how hard it's been, keeping quiet. But I love you. You know that, right?"
Arya looked out at the parking lot again. "Yeah, I know," she said. "I have to go. I'll see you at 3. Before he could answer, Arya shot out of the car, blood rushing in her ears. How was she supposed to be Icelandic Arya, who left her past behind, if one of her worst memories of Rosewood kept bubbling to the surface? It had happened in May of 7th grade. Rosewood Day had dismissed the students early for teacher conferences, so Arya and Allie headed to Sparrow, Hollis Campus's music store, to search for new CDs.
As they cut through a back alley, Arya noticed her father's familiar beat-up brown Honda Civic in a far-off space in an empty parking lot. As Arya and Allie walked toward the car to leave a note, they realized there was someone inside. Actually, two someones. Arya's father, Byron, and a girl, about 20 years old, kissing his neck. That's when Byron looked up and saw Arya. She sprinted away before she had to see any more, and before he could stop her. Allie followed Arya all the way back to her house, but didn't try to stop her when Arya said she wanted to be alone. Later that night, Byron came up to Arya's room to explain. It wasn't what it looked like, he said. But Arya wasn't stupid. Every year, her father invited his students over to their house for get-to-know-you cocktails, and Arya had seen that girl walk through her very door. Her name was Meredith, Arya remembered, because Meredith had gotten tipsy and spelled out her name on the refrigerator in plastic letter magnets. When Meredith left, instead of shaking her dad's hand as the other kids had, she gave him a lingering kiss on his cheek. Byron begged Arya not to tell her mom. He promised her it would never happen again. She decided to believe him, and so she kept his secret. He'd never said so, but Arya believed Meredith was the reason her dad took his sabbatical when he did. You promised yourself you wouldn't think about it, Arya thought, glancing back over her shoulder. Her father hand-signaled out of the Rosewood parking lot. Arya walked into the narrow hallway of the faculty wing. Ezra's office was at the end of the hall, next to a small, cozy window seat. She stopped in the doorway and watched him as he typed something into his computer. Finally, she knocked. Ezra's blue eyes widened when he saw her. He looked adorable in his button-down white shirt, blue rosewood blazer, green cords, and beat-up black loafers. The corners of his mouth curled up into the tiniest, shyest smile. Hey, he said. Arya hovered in the doorway. Can I talk to you? Arya asked. Her voice squeaked a little. Ezra hesitated, pushing a lock of hair out of his eyes. Arya noticed a Snoopy Band-Aid wrapped around his left pinky finger.
Sure, he said softly. Come in.
She walked into his office and shut the door. It was empty, except for a wide, heavy wood desk, two folding chairs, and a computer. She sat down on the empty folding chair. So, Arya said. Hey.
Hey again, Ezra answered, grinning.
He lowered his eyes and took a gulp from his Rosewood Day Crest coffee mug.
Listen, he started.
About yesterday, Arya said at the same time. They both laughed.
Ladies first, Ezra smiled.
Arya scratched the back of her neck where her straight black hair was drawn up in a ponytail. I wanted to talk about us. Ezra nodded but didn't say anything. Arya wiggled in her chair. Well, I guess it's shocking that I'm your student after, you know, snookers. But if you don't mind, I don't. Ezra cupped his hand around his mug. Arya listened to the school-issued wall clock ticking off the seconds.
I don't think it's a good idea, he said softly. You said you were older.
Arya laughed, not sure how serious he was. I never told you how old I was. She lowered her eyes. You just assumed.
Yeah, but you shouldn't have implied it, Ezra responded.
Everybody lies about their age, Arya said quietly. Ezra ran his hand through his hair.
But you're...
He met her eyes and sighed.
Look, I think you're amazing, Arya. I do. I met you in that bar, and I was like, wow, who is this? She's so unlike any other girl I've ever met.
Arya looked down, feeling both pleased and a little queasy. Ezra reached across the desk and touched his hand to hers. It was warm, dry, and soothing, but then quickly pulled away.
But this isn't meant to be, you know? 'Cause, well, You're my student. I could get in a lot of trouble. You don't want me to get in trouble, do you?
No one would know, Arya said faintly, although she couldn't help but think about that bizarre text from yesterday, and that maybe someone already knew. It took Ezra a long time to respond. It seemed to Arya that he was trying to make up his mind. She looked at him hopefully.
I'm sorry, Arya, he finally mumbled, but I think you should go.
Arya stood up, feeling her cheeks burn. Of course. Arya wrapped her hands around the top of the chair. It felt like hot coals were bouncing around her insides.
I'll see you in class, Ezra whispered.
She shut the door carefully. In the hall, teachers swarmed around her, rushing off to their homerooms. She decided to get to her locker by cutting through the commons. She needed some fresh air. Outside, Arya heard a familiar girl's laugh. She froze for a second. When would she stop thinking she heard Allison everywhere? She trudged not on the common's winding stone path, like you were supposed to, but through the grass. The morning fog was so dense that Arya could barely see her legs below her. Her footprints vanished in the squishy grass as quickly as she made them. Good. This seemed like an appropriate time to disappear completely. 10. Single girls have way more fun. That afternoon, Emily was standing in the student parking lot, lost in thought, when someone threw their hands over her eyes. Emily jumped, startled.
Whoa, chill. It's just me.
Emily turned and sighed with relief. It was only Maya. Emily had been so distracted and paranoid since getting that bizarre note yesterday. She'd been about to unlock her car. Her mom let her and Carolyn take it to school on the condition they drive carefully and call when they got there, and grab her swimming bag for practice.
Sorry, Emily said. I thought...
Never mind.
I missed you today, Maya smiled.
Me too, Emily smiled back. She'd tried calling Maya this morning to offer her a ride to school, but Maya's mom said she'd already left.
So, how are you?
Well, I could be better.
But,
never mind.
I missed you today, Maya smiled.
Me too, Emily smiled back. She'd tried calling Maya this morning to offer her a ride to school, but Maya's mom said she'd already left. So, how are you?
Well, I could be better.
Today, Maya had secured her wild dark hair off her face with adorable iridescent pink butterfly clips.
Oh yeah?
Emily tilted her head. Maya pursed her lips together and slid one of her feet out of her Oakley sandals. Her second toe was longer than her big toe, just like Emily's.
I'd be better if you came somewhere with me. Right now.
But I have swimming, Emily said, hearing Eeyore in her voice again. Maya took her hand and swung it.
What if I told you that where we're going sort of involves swimming?
Emily narrowed her eyes.
What do you mean?
You have to trust me. Even though she'd been close to Hannah and Spencer and Arya, all of Emily's favorite memories were of hanging out alone with Allie. Like when they dressed up in bulky snow pants to sled down Bayberry Hill, talked about their ideal boyfriends, or cried about the Jenna thing from sixth grade and comforted each other. When it was just the two of them, Emily saw a slightly less perfect Allie, which somehow made her seem even more perfect, and Emily felt she could be herself. It seemed like days, weeks, years had gone by where Emily hadn't been herself, and she thought that now she could have something like that with Maya. She missed having a best friend. Right now, Ben and all the other boys were probably changing into their suits, slapping one another's bare butts with wet towels. Coach Lauren was writing the practice sets on the big marker board and carrying out the appropriate fins, buoys, and paddles. And the girls on the team were complaining because they all had their periods at the same time. Did she dare miss the second day of practice? Emily squeezed her plastic fish keychain.
I suppose I could tell Carolyn I had to tutor somebody in Spanish, she murmured. Emily knew Carolyn wouldn't buy that, but she probably wouldn't squeal on Emily either. Triple-checking the parking lot to see if anyone was watching, Emily smiled and unlocked the car. All right, let's go. My brother and I checked out the spot this weekend, Maya said as Emily pulled into the gravel parking lot. Emily stepped out of the car and stretched. I forgot about this place. They were at the Marwin Trail, which was about 5 miles long and bordered a deep creek. She and her friends used to ride their bikes here all the time. Allie and Spencer would pedal furiously at the end and usually tie, and stop at the little snack bar by the swimming area for Butterfingers and Diet Cokes. As she followed Maya up a muddy slope, Maya grabbed her arm. Oh, I forgot to tell you. My mom said your mom stopped over yesterday while we were in school. She brought over brownies. Really? Emily responded, confused. She wondered why her mother hadn't mentioned anything to her at dinner. The brownies were delish. My brother and I polished them off last night. They came to the dirt trail. A canopy of oak sheltered them. The air had that fresh, woodsy smell, and it felt about 20 degrees cooler. We're not there yet. Maya took her hand and led her down the path to a small stone bridge. 20 feet beneath it, the stream widened. The calm water glittered in the late afternoon sun. Maya walked right up to the edge of the bridge and stripped down to her matching pale pink bra and undies. She threw her clothes in a pile, stuck her tongue out at Emily, and jumped off. Wait! Emily rushed to the edge. Did Maya know how deep this was? A full 1 Mississippi, 2 Mississippi later, Emily heard a splash. Maya's head popped back up out of the water. Told you it involved swimming. Come on, strip. Emily glanced at Maya's pile of clothes. She really hated undressing in front of people, even the swim team girls who saw her every day. She slowly took off her pleated rosewood skirt, crossing her legs over each other so Maya couldn't see her bare, muscular thighs, and then pulled at the tank top she wore under her uniform blouse. She decided to keep it on. She looked over the edge to the creek and, steeling herself, she jumped. A moment later, the water hugged her body. It was pleasantly warm and thick with mud, not cold and clean like the pool. The built-in shelf bra of her tank top puffed out with water. It's like a sauna in here, Maya said. Yeah. Emily paddled over to the shallower area where Maya was standing. Emily realized she could see Maya's nipples straight through her bra and cut her eyes away. I used to go cliff diving with Justin all the time back in Cali, Maya said. He'd stand up at the top and, like, think about it for 10 minutes before jumping. I like how you didn't even hesitate. Emily floated on her back and smiled. She couldn't help it. She gobbled up Maya's compliments like cheesecake. Maya squirted Emily with water through her cupped hands. Some of it squirted right into her mouth. The creek water tasted gooey and almost metallic, nothing like chlorinated pool water. I think me and Justin are going to break up, Maya said. Emily swam closer to the edge and stood up. Really? Why? Yeah. The long-distance thing is too stressful. He calls me, like, all the time. I've only been gone for a few days, and he's already sent me 2 letters. Huh, Emily answered, sifting her fingers through the murky water. Then something occurred to her. She turned to Maya. Did you, put a note in my swim locker yesterday? Maya frowned. What, after school? No. You walked me home, remember? Right. She didn't really think Maya had written the note, but things would have been so much simpler if she had. What did the note say? Emily shook her head. Never mind, it was nothing. She cleared her throat. You know, I think I might break up with my boyfriend, too. Whoa. Emily wouldn't have been any more surprised if a bluebird had just flown out of her mouth.
Really? Maya said.
Emily blinked water out of her eyes.
I don't know. Maybe.
Maya stretched her arms over her head, and Emily caught sight of that scar on her wrist again. She looked away.
Well, fuck a moose, Maya said.
Emily smiled.
Huh? It's this thing I say sometimes, Maya said. It means... screw it.
She turned away and shrugged.
I guess it's silly.
No, I like it, Emily said.
Fuck a moose.
She giggled. She always felt funny swearing, as if her mom could hear her from their kitchen, 10 miles away.
You totally should break up with your boyfriend, though,
Maya said.
Know why?
Why?
That would mean we'd both be single.
And that means what? Emily asked. The forest was very quiet and still. Maya moved closer to her.
And that means we can have fun.
She grabbed Emily by the shoulder and dunked her under the water.
Hey,
Emily squealed. She splashed Maya back, ripping her whole arm through the water, creating a giant wave. Then she grabbed Maya by the leg and started tickling underneath her toes.
Help, Maya screamed. Not my feet. I'm so ticklish.
I found your weakness, Emily crowed, maniacally dragging Maya over to the waterfall. Maya managed to wrench her foot away and pounced on Emily's shoulders from behind. Maya's hands drifted up Emily's sides, then down to her stomach, where she tickled her. Emily squealed. She finally pushed Maya into a small cave in the rocks.
I hope there are no bats in here, Maya squealed.
Beams of sunlight pierced through the cave's tiny openings, making a halo around the top of Maya's sopping wet head.
You have to come in here, Maya said.
She held out her hand. Emily stood next to her, feeling the cave's smooth, cool sides. The sounds of her breathing echoed off the narrow walls. They looked at each other and grinned. Emily bit her lip. This was such a perfect friend moment. It made her feel kind of melancholy and nostalgic. Maya's eyes turned down in concern.
What's wrong?
Emily took a deep breath.
Well, you know that girl who lived in your house? Allison?
Yeah. She went missing, right after 7th grade. She was never found. Maya shivered slightly.
I heard something about that.
Emily hugged herself. She was getting cold, too.
We were really close.
Maya moved closer to Emily and put her arm around her.
I didn't realize.
Yeah. Emily's chin wobbled.
I just wanted you to know.
Thanks. A few long moments passed. Emily and Maya continued to hug. Then Maya backed off.
I kind of lied earlier about why I want to break up with Justin.
Emily raised an eyebrow, curious.
I'm not sure if I like guys, Maya said quietly. It's weird. I think they're cute, but when I get alone with them, I don't want to be with them. I'd rather be with, like, someone more like me.
She smiled crookedly.
You know?
Emily ran her hands over her face and hair. Maya's gaze felt too close all of a sudden. She started.
No, she didn't know.
The bushes above them moved. Emily flinched. Her mom used to hate when she came to this trail. You never knew what kind of kidnappers or murderers hid in places like this. The woods were still for a moment, but then a flock of birds scattered wildly into the sky. Emily flattened herself up against the rock. Was someone watching them? Who was that laughing? The laugh sounded familiar. Then Emily heard heavy breathing. Goosebumps rose up on her arms and she peered out of the cave. It was only a group of boys. Suddenly they burst into the creek, wielding sticks like swords. Emily backed away from Maya and out of the waterfall.
Where are you going?
Maya called. Emily looked at Maya and then at the boys, who had abandoned the sticks and were now throwing rocks at each other. One of them was Mike Montgomery, her old friend Aria's little brother. He'd grown up quite a bit since she last saw him. And wait, Mike went to Rosewood. Would he recognize her? Emily climbed out of the water and started scurrying up the hill. She turned back to Maya. I have to get back to school before Carolyn's done with swimming. She pulled on her skirt. Do you want me to throw down your clothes? Whatever. At that, she stepped out of the waterfall and waded through the water, her sheer underwear clinging to her butt. Maya climbed up the slope slowly, not once covering up her stomach or boobs with her hands. The freshman boys stopped what they were doing and stared. And even though Emily didn't want to, she couldn't help but stare, too. 11. At least sweet potatoes have lots of vitamin A.
Her. Definitely her, Hannah whispered, pointing.
Nah, they're too small, Mona whispered back.
But look at the way they puff up at the top. Totally fake, Hannah countered.
I think that woman over there has had her butt done.
Gross.
Hannah wrinkled her nose and ran her hands over the sides of her own toned, perfectly round butt to make sure it was still perfectly perfect. It was late afternoon on Wednesday, just 2 days until Noel Kahn's annual field party, and she and Mona were lounging on the outside terrace at Yam, the organic cafe at Mona's parents' country club. Below them, a bunch of Rosewood boys played a quick round of golf before dinner, but Hannah and Mona were playing another type of game. Spot the fake boobs. Or fake anything else, as there was lots of fake stuff around here.
Yeah, it looks like her surgeon messed up, Mona murmured. I think my mom plays tennis with her. I'll ask.
Hannah looked again at the pixie-ish 30-something woman by the bar, whose butt did look suspiciously extra luscious for the rest of her toothpick skinny figure.
I'd die before I got plastic surgery.
Mona played with the charm on her Tiffany bracelet, the one she, evidently, didn't have to give back.
Do you think Aria Montgomery had hers done?
Hannah looked up, startled.
Why?
She's really thin, and they're, like, too perfect, Mona said. She went to Finland or wherever, right? I hear in Europe they can do your boobs for really cheap.
I don't think they're fake, Hannah murmured.
How do you know?
Hannah chewed on her straw. Aria's boobs had always been there. She and Allison had been the only two of the friends who needed a bra in 7th grade. Allie always flaunted hers, but the only time Aria seemed to notice she even had boobs was when she knit everyone bras as Christmas gifts and had to make herself a larger size.
She just doesn't seem the type, Hannah answered.
Talking to Mona about her old friends was awkward territory. Hannah still felt bad about how she and Allie and the others used to tease Mona back in 7th grade, but it always seemed too weird to bring up now. Mona stared at her.
Are you all right? You look different today.
Hannah flinched.
I do? How?
Mona gave her a tiny smirk.
Whoa, somebody's jumpy.
I'm not jumpy,
Hannah said quickly. But she was. Ever since the police station and that email she'd gotten last night, she'd been freaking. This morning, her eyes even seemed more dull brown than green, and her arms looked disturbingly puffy. She had this horrible sense that she really was going to spontaneously morph back into her 7th grade self. A blonde, giraffe-like waitress interrupted them.
Have you decided?
Mona looked at the menu.
I'll have the Asian chicken salad, no dressing.
Hannah cleared her throat.
I want a garden salad with sprouts, no dressing, and an extra large order of sweet potato fries. In a carryout box, please.
As the waitress took their menus, Mona pushed her sunglasses down her nose.
Sweet potato fries?
For my mom,
Hannah answered quickly. She lives on them.
Down on the golf course, a group of older guys teed up, along with one young, good-looking guy in fatigue shorts. He looked a little out of place with his messy brown hair, cargos, and... Was that a...
Rosewood police polo?
Oh, no. It was.
Wilden scanned the terrace and coolly nodded when he saw Hannah. She ducked.
Who is that? Mona purred.
Hannah mumbled, half under the table.
Darren Wilden was a golfer? Come on. Back in high school, he was the type to flick lit matches at the guys on Rosewood's golf team. Was the whole world out to get her?
Mona squinted.
Wait, didn't he go to our school?
She grinned. Oh my god, it's the girls' diving team guy.
Hannah, you little bitch, how does he know you?
He's... Hannah paused. She ran her hand along the waistband of her jeans.
I met him on the Marwin Trail a couple of days ago when I was running. We stopped at the water fountain at the same time.
Nice, Mona said. Does he work around here?
Hannah paused again. She really wanted to avoid this.
I think he said he was a cop, she said nonchalantly.
You're kidding.
Mona took out her Shu Uemura lip moisturizer from her blue leather hobo bag and lightly dabbed her bottom lip.
That guy's hot enough to be in a policeman's calendar.
I could just see it. Mr. April. Let's ask if we can see his nightstick.
Shh, Hannah hissed.
Their salads came. Hannah pushed the styrofoam container of sweet potato fries to the side and took a bite of an undressed grape tomato. Mona leaned closer.
I bet you could hook up with him.
Who?
Mr. April, who else?
Hannah snorted.
Right. Totally.
You should bring him to the con party. I heard some cops came to the party last year. That's how they never get busted.
Hannah sat back.
The con party was a legendary Rosewood tradition. The cons lived on 20-some acres of land, and the con boys, Noel was the youngest, held a back-to-school party every year. The kids raided their parents' extremely well-stocked liquor supply in the basement, and there was always a scandal. Last year, Noel shot his best friend James in the bare ass with his BB gun because James had tried to make out with Noel's then-girlfriend, Alyssa Pennypacker. They were both so drunk they laughed the whole way to the ER and couldn't remember how or why it happened. The year before that, a bunch of stoners smoked too much and tried to get Mr. Khan's Appaloosas to take hits from a bong.
Nah. Hannah bit into another tomato. I think I'm going with John.
Mona scrunched up her face.
Why waste a perfectly good party night on Sean? He took a virginity pledge. He probably won't even go.
Just because you sign a virginity pledge doesn't mean you stop partying too.
Hannah took a big bite of her salad, crunching the dry, unappetizing vegetables in her mouth.
Well, if you're not going to ask Mr. April to Knowles, I will.
Mona stood up.
Hannah grabbed her arm.
No!
Why not? Come on, it'd be fun.
Hannah dug her fingernails into Mona's arm.
I said no!
Mona sat back down and stuck out her lip.
Why not?
Hannah's heart galloped.
All right, you can't tell anyone, though.
She took a deep breath.
I met him at the police station, not the trail. I was called in for questioning for the Tiffany's thing, but it's not a big deal. I'm not busted.
Oh my god, Mona yelled.
Wilden looked up at them again.
Shh, Hannah hissed. Are you all right? What happened? Tell me everything,
Mona whispered back.
There isn't much to tell.
Hannah threw her napkin over her plate.
They brought me to the station, my mom came with me, and we sat for a while. They let me off with a warning.
Whatever, the whole thing took like 20 minutes.
Yikes.
Mona gave Hannah an indeterminate look. Hannah wondered for a second if it was a look of pity.
It wasn't like dramatic or anything, Hannah said defensively, her throat dry.
Not much happened. Most of the cops were on the phone. I text messaged the whole time. She paused, considering whether she should tell Mona about that not-it text message she'd received from A, whoever A was.
but why waste her breath? It couldn't have actually meant anything, right? Mona took a sip of her Perrier. I thought you'd never get caught. Hannah swallowed hard.
Yeah, well...
Did your mom totally kill you? Hannah looked away. On the drive home, her mom had asked Hannah if she'd meant to steal the bracelet and earrings. When Hannah said no, Ms. Marin answered,
Good, it's settled then.
Then she flipped open her cell to make a call. Hannah shrugged and stood up.
I just remembered, I gotta go walk Dot.
Are you sure you're okay? Mona asked. Your face looks kind of splotchy.
No biggie.
She smacked her lips glamorously at Mona and turned for the door. Hannah sauntered coolly out of the restaurant, but when she got to the parking lot, she broke into a run. She climbed inside her Toyota Prius, a car her mom had bought for herself last year, but had recently handed off to Hannah because she'd grown tired of it, and checked her face in the rearview mirror. There were hideous bright red patches on her cheeks and forehead.